Okay. First of all, today is, it's pouring rain here. It hasn't stopped since yesterday. So maybe we're meeting our quota for the year, and maybe this is, that they say this may be the last big rain. As far as Yomo, am I right? The Yomo agrees
probably,
with me.
But not necessarily.
He has checked the charts. Today is Monday, where are we? I'm all confused. We're
March.
March 20th, 2023. I just want to mention what we mentioned about David and Nava Applebaum. This was, Chabad put this out. Her wedding gown was turned into a chuppah. And a couple just recently married here, Olim Chadashim, I gather, from the United States, went to the widow, my Talmidah, Deborah, widow and mother of the terror victims, and they asked if they could use the chuppah for their wedding. It's a very beautiful, moving article, and I want to compliment Ilana Rosenstein and Itama Kutai, who were smart enough to be wed under a deeply symbolic chuppah. And all I can say is, Am Yisrael Chai. I also, with Yonadi Yoma Biden, called, it's still beyond my comprehension why Netanyahu didn't say, Mr. President of the United States, we in Israel love America so, we want to emulate you in many ways, and that's why we're making these reforms so our judges should be selected the way they are in the great, modern, liberal, progressive United States. Why Netanyahu doesn't say that? It's beyond my comprehension. Here's a quote from Thomas Jefferson to William Charles Jarvis, 28th of September, 1820. You might imagine that this quote was written today. And he writes to this person, you can pick it up on Thomas Jefferson government documents. You seem to consider the judges as the ultimate arbiters of all constitutional questions. A very dangerous doctrine indeed, and one which would place us under the despotism of an oligarchy. Our judges are as honest as other men, and not more so. They have with others the same passion for party, for power, and privileges. And their power is far more dangerous as they are in office and not responsible as other functionaries are to the elective control. And this quote goes on and on in favor of giving back the authority to the people. I can't believe it. Thomas Jefferson. Okay. I hope people will pick up what I said and publicize it. There's much more, but ad kan. Regarding our lectures, Baruch Amsel, my dear student who's become an expert on lineage and history of Torah, tells me whatever's left of Chutkov today, that's the Hasidus that Reb Meir Shapiro came from, is based out of Manchester, England. Your friend Mark in Chicago, Rabbi Moshe Katz, wrote something interesting. I have a landlord in Chicago who is a Holocaust survivor. He didn't remain frum, but would often say to me that he was not Mechalel Shabbos b'farchesia. When Rav Shneur Kotler was nifta, they had a communal hesped for him. Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik delivered an amazing hesped, and I was surprised to see my landlord there. I asked him, what brought him here? He responded, I had a brother who was killed by the Nazis. He learned in Chachmei Lublin. I heard that Lakewood Yeshiva was like Chachmei Lublin, so I came out of respect. I think that's a beautiful story. And the world doesn't realize all the fine differences between yeshivas. All right, I want to pick up where I left off, and there's a world yet to do on Chachma Lublim. As I said, I'm now giving a general survey. Be'ezrat Hashem, after Pesach, I'm going to go a lot deeper and introduce you to a very brilliant doctorate that was done, but leave that for after Pesach. Hillel Zeidman's article, which we're in the middle of, is a basic article written by someone who knew Rav Meir Shapiro and knew Chachmei Lublin and knew Poland. And here, Rav Meir Shapiro, as we explained, he was raised in wealth. He never was poor. He couldn't tolerate the yeshiva boys being looked down upon him. As we said last week, thank God for the Ganavim. That enabled the yeshiva boys to have a place to live at night, to guard the stores. And this tremendous idea and the cornerstone laying and his brilliant ideas, but you need money. And immediately, problems began. A man of great vision, Agudat Yisrael, the Sem, Polish Parliament, a representative, a senator, and number one, anti-Semitism. Call it anti-Semitic bureaucracy. All the Ishurim he had to get, everything drained his strength. It didn't go chad v'chalak. In Israel, we have a terrible problem because we've inherited a bureaucracy from the communist system, the socialist system, the old Mapai system. It's a lot better, but there's still a derech arukah to go. Put that all together in Poland 100 years ago and add anti-Semitism. Then the biggest problem of all, the money. You can have the greatest ideals in the world, but without money there is no honey. And the Polish Jews were not wealthy. This is after World War I. And he realized right away he's never going to be able to raise the millions of zlotys that were needed to build the campus he envisioned. So he started to travel, and he did fundraising in Germany, France, Belgium, Holland, Britain, and even that didn't bring in what was needed. In 1927, he arrived in New York and remained there for many months, spoke all over the United States and Canada, and didn't have great success. On one hand, the people were carried away, carried him on their arms. Rav Meir Shapiro, a legendary figure, a fabulous speaker, and it brought back memories of the Alter Heim. My Talmud Ben has just walked in and he's living testimony to the rain which is still coming down.
There's
outside.
There's flooding all around the campus. You cannot get in without going through...
Right. There's flooding. The whole campus, the whole approach has to be rebuilt and be rebuilt properly, and the flooding and the puddles. And all I can tell you is I put on good rubbers this morning and I walked through all the puddles in dignity. But coming back here, I had a short drive, and it was 6 o'clock, so not too much traffic. I salute Charlie, who had a long drive from Rehovot with the traffic and the rain. Kol hakavod. Anyway, coming back here, they loved Rav Meir Shapiro, but their resources were limited. And you have to remember, he particularly was appealing in America to the Pelesha and the Galiciana. That element, they were not that successful. This is not the German Jews who conquered America by the 1920s, but their interest in Chachmei Lublin was far from prominent. And now there's another factor, and this factor too is interesting. The Litvishi Yeshivat, all of them, practically without exception, Mir, Slabodka, to a certain degree, Telz, Panovich, they all survived and thrived with money they got from America. Why did they have such success? Were the Litvakin more successful than the Pailisha, than the Galiciana, than the Jews from the Ukraine? But there's one difference. The Litvishi Yeshivat all opened offices in America. When you have an office, then it's a different story. You have an address, you have someone who has to achieve funds, so he gets his salary, he gets his percentage. There, it's not hit and run. Yes, occasionally the Litvishi officers brought in Gedolei Rashi Yeshiva, and many Rashi Yeshivas spent a year in America, 10 months in America. Rav Elchanan Wasserman, Rav Baruch Ber Leibovitz, Rav Yitzchak Isaac Shor, I should say Sher, they spent time in America, but there was an office behind them. Rav Meir Shapiro was hit and run. And with all due respect to his godlet, he did raise $53,000 in America, which was a hefty sum. We're talking the late 20s, it's before the Depression. On the other hand, all this took away his neshama. You got to understand the pressure this put on him. And there's a psychological reason too behind this. When you've never been poor, it's very hard to ask for charity. And I know what I'm talking about. I just wrote a letter of condolence. I mentioned yesterday. By the way, the end of the shiur yesterday, I'm getting compliments on the story. But Malka and I both say that's the greatest story Rabbi Albert ever told. Have you heard that? You'll hear it. It's one of a kind, that story. It's a Pesach story. But we had very hard times. I don't come from wealth, my own background. And we came in Aliyah in 69. And you can't start to imagine how difficult life was here. As I told you more than once, most of the economy was under the table. And I had the misfortune of working for the Israeli government and for the Jewish agency. And that's, you can't get paid under the table. So everything went away on taxes. And those were very difficult years. And it leaves scars. And I mentioned the Alberts because the only new clothes I ever got from 69 through the late 80s with two suits that Roy brought me. He had Nishul, someone who manufactures clothes or imports, and he picked out, I remember, a brown suit I had and a blue suit that Roy brought for me. But it leaves scars. I give you a simple example. If something spills, so I see my kids will take 3-4 napkins and wipe it up. I'll only take one napkin. And I can afford 3-4 napkins today. What's the big deal? But you see, it's psychological. The reverse is also true. Reb Meir Shapiro, the fundraising, here is someone that never had to ask anyone for anything. Remember what I told you last week? His parents were wealthy. His in-laws. He got a fortune from his father-in-law. He was wealthy. Medaf nicht umkommen zu mention. You don't have to ask. And then he gets involved. He has to plead for money. And it, this hurt. This bothered. This took away. Now, When he came back from America, that's when he could complete the building. $53,000 was a hefty sum. He completed the building, and in 1930, the yeshiva opened. And here too, there was opposition to the yeshiva. And you know, you think to yourself, the yeshiva's opening, everything is beautiful, it's unique, it's kavod chatera. And here too there was opposition. We'll go into the opposition in more detail, but suffice it to say, we Torah Jews have one big problem. Many of us think we have a monopoly on truth and everyone else is wrong. I admit I'm different. I'm a Talmud of the Rav, and I'm the happiest person in the world to see Chabad thriving and Lakewood thriving and Talavitel should thrive again, and Mekas HaRav and Chevron and Panovich. Doesn't mean I'm a Panovich, just mean I have my own viewpoint. I'm very happy the way I live. But as I've said so many times, this is for me. It may not be for other people. Each person has to find his own, I would say, contentment, sense of accomplishment, his own pride, on the spectrum of Torah existence and the saga of the Torah people. But we have within that attitude, and you've all seen it, we're all caught up in it, Das Torah, we have a Kabbalah, Rav Sach introduced, there's a proper way to think. Well, when you get involved and only you're right and everyone else is wrong. So here, the Maram Shapiro is coming along, Rav Meir Shapiro, and he's introducing a concept that they never had before, a focal central yeshiva, a Hasidic focal central yeshiva. He's part of Agudat Yisrael. And there was opposition. This hurt him as well. What balanced out the opposition was the most important rebbeim in Poland at that time stood behind him. They were there when there was the groundbreaking ceremony, and they were there when he made a big ceremony opening the yeshiva. It coincided with Chag HaShavuot, Man Matan Torateinu, the Gera Rebbe, Rav Avraham Mordechai. As I told you many times, he was the biggest Rebbe in the world at that time. He was there, B'lev V'Nefesh. The Chutkava Rebbe, this was his own chassid. That's the Rebbe Yisrael Friedman. It's the Ruzhina dynasty. He was there. The Sakalava Rebbe, the Lublina Rebbe of Shlomo Eger, the Amshinava Rebbe, the Radzima Rebbe, Rabbi Aaron Levine, one of the most famous Rabbanim in Poland, the Reisha Rav. So this gave him Stolzkeit, but the Atmos Nefesh was part of the story. Money, pleading with people, it hurts. It hurts. I can understand it. More than that, from within your own camp, no unity, criticism. Something very nice happened. Lublin, at that time, had no Rav. The last Rav there was Rabbi Eliyahu Klatskin. Some of you may remember my shirm, and some of you may remember what went on here in Israel a number of years ago. Rabbi Eliyahu Klatskin was an Adam Gadol, a great Rav, the Lublin Rav. He later went in Aliyah. Genius of geniuses. His son was a world-famous mathematic professor, not religious, like at that time, Ein Bayit Hashem Shamait. And the son once came to visit his father, and it was Friday night, or Shabbos morning that he came to the house, and his father asks him, when did you arrive? And he said, well, I arrived yesterday, and his father knew the whole train schedule by heart. And he said to him, no, impossible. The only train that you could have taken arrived here at 8 o'clock last night, 2 hours after Shabbat began. I mean, there's a Ganesha Cup. He is very famous. I can't go into details now, but maybe you remember Israel was shaking. Zikri Haget. Ben, do you know what I'm talking about? He had a case. In this field. Zikui Haget. What does Zikui get mean? He had a case that a soldier was going into the army, World War I. And before he left, the soldier said, I want to give my wife a get, an authorization. If anything, I don't come back, no one knows where I am, she can get a get. Before he could do the authorization, he was pulled away into the army and he never came back. The wife remained an aguna. And he was matir, the woman that the Beit Din could authorize the get in place of the husband. Ben, if you would suggest this idea in Lakewood, and the Alamdanim there, they should slam you, they threw you out because you read the New York Times in the dining room. This, they'll throw you out on Lundus. That, okay. There was a Zikri get hundreds of years earlier. Big Hasidic Rebbe was a Gaon Adia. The same story. A soldier came home, they located him, he said, I'll give a get, and disappeared. And we had the case in Tzfat. Remember the case? This woman, a Frum woman, married to this man, and the man that was in a car accident, and he became a vegetable. And now he can't command giving a get. And the Beit Din in Tzfat came up with Zikui HaGet. It's a true. I still don't understand the justification. My daughter knew the Dayanim involved, the graduates of Hebron, the Av Beit Din, his own Rebbe disowned him here. My daughter said he's Kula L'Shem Shemayim, he's just overwhelmed by the tragedy that the woman, a young woman, and her husband is a vegetable, he's never going to recover, etc. He later, I don't know what happened afterwards, my daughter once was involved in a case where the man was able to say Shema Yisrael, and Rabbi Yosef Paskin, that's enough to give the get, as long as he authorized him and said Shema Yisrael, it shows a zeifel zin in hotagahat, that much seichel he still had. So that's Rabbi Eliyahu Klatskin. He went in Aliyah, and Lublin, being a big city with many elements already, Aguda, Mizrahi, Zionist, Communist, Bolsheviks, Bundist, they couldn't choose a chief rabbi. But now that the yeshiva was being built and the whole world came and Lublin was viewed now as the center of Torah in Poland, they unanimously elected Rav Meir Shapiro to become the rabbi. Even the irreligious, they all said, we can't put up another candidate. He's put us on the map. That Derech Eretz, he was elected, so he became the Lublin Rav. He immediately moved to Lublin, and he took an apartment in the yeshiva. See that also it shows the unbelievable total dedication to the yeshiva. Nu, Ben, who else do you know? I mean, do you want to live your Rosh Yeshiva? Your father would like to live in the yeshiva, and there's no privacy. Your mother, Rav Mordechai Gifter, when they brought him back to America, which to me, I've said this many times, to me it's tragic, because he belonged here. He would have built Tel Stone. It would be a shame dover today. But he went back to America. He lived in the dormitory. He said he doesn't want to move out. He's only here till he can put the yeshiva on the map again. Then he's gone back to Israel. He and his wife lived in the dormitory. And he died there. He, you know, he never came back. And Tel Stone remains in name, Tel Stone. But go and find Tel's yeshiva in that area. I haven't found it yet. You have other yeshiva. They're famous or infamous for what they do with drug addicts and etc. Okay, but this was Reb Meir Shapiro. All right. Then the yeshiva.
They also say Reb Chaim Volozhin.
Excuse me.
Reb Chaim Volozhin.
Yeah, what about Reb Chaim Volozhin?
The story that he slept, he used to sleep in the yeshiva, and people would ask him, how can you sleep at night? Because they had those shmiras.
Yeah, they learned around the clock.
And he said that if they weren't learning, then I couldn't sleep. Good gesagt.
Okay, that's good gesagt. That's the Chaim Volozhin. It's anecdotal. We'll come to that. One of our big problems when we deal with Volozhin is where do you get the facts? A book came out of Volozhin where the author reproduces so-called conversations of 200 years earlier. It's a little bit difficult to be samach on that it's factual. But all right, we'll try our best. But leave Volozhin yet. Old Chazon Lemoed. Now, the minute the yeshiva opened, and here I have to tell you the similarities between Chachmei Lublin and what we call YU today are overwhelming. Here, Reb Meir Shapiro raises the money, builds this beautiful building, this beautiful campus, but then there's upkeep. Where do you get the money for upkeep? Making it worse, you're talking the Depression now. You're not just in the post-World War I era with all its hardship. You're in the eye of the Depression, 29, 30, exactly the story with YU. Rabbi Revel, the building, the dedication, they're riding high. The Depression. Pledges that you can never collect. It's sad. It's eating away at him. And both Revel and the Maram Shapiro die young. The Maram Shapiro, we'll see shortly, 3-4 years later, dies young with all these beautiful plans. Rabbi Revel barely survives, dies 1940, and very hard years, the 30s, the health, the money. And you see what's fascinating with this analogy as who was Revel? Remember I told you, Rabbi Moshe Big said to me, the first shidduch they made in America was Bernard Revel and Sarah Travis. Reb Shimon Zivitz, the Rev of Pittsburgh, who would go to Marietta, Ohio every few months, and he was the Rev for there as well. It was a small community. And this young girl from Marietta, Ohio, Chaya Sarah Travis, a frum girl, you have no idea what we're talking about. I knew her personally very well. And the shidduch with this genius, with this young man, a Talmud Chacham, a photographic memory, a PhD from Dropsy, wealthy family. They didn't have a care in the world. Later in the 20s, then the family suffered. But Revel too, he came from wealth, comes to the yeshiva, big plans, and it all goes up in smoke financially. And that analogy is fascinating and very true. Two gedolim, and each caught up in this web, where do we get the money? For upkeep, the building they succeeded, it's on the map, but Revel had a mortgage. Upkeep, here, building, food, clothes, the community, the property, the building, the heat, the winters in Poland took its toll. Okay. Now, what was very unique about the Chachmei Lublin Yeshiva, a number of factors. Number one, in Europe there were basically three different approaches to learning. All of you are familiar, the Lithuanian approach. I'll come back to it in a second. There was the Polish approach. There was the Galician approach, the Galiciana. What are we talking about? Okay. Let's take the Galiciana approach. Galiciana approach and a good deal of Hasidus, and this continues until today, what's important in learning is halacha. To reach halachic conclusions, you do the Gemara quickly. If you learned in a Hasidic yeshiva, a Hasidic shtibbel, you didn't do every Tosfot. You did the Tosfot, you're a teenage kid. What's important, halacha l'maisa. That's more important than anything. And this is why in the Galiciana part of Europe, which at times was Poland, at times the Ukraine, they kids 11, 12 years old learned Cholin. How do you think a kid learned Cholin? Halacha l'maisa, basa v'cholav, tarovet. Even Shchita was halacha l'maisa. Kids, I still remember in the Bronx on Bathgate Avenue, Thursday, people were buying chickens, and the Shechit is sitting there, and he shechs the chickens. The kid already saw Shchita. He comes home, the mother opens it, kashes it. If she finds a shayla, the kid has to run to the nearest rub and ask a shayla with the chicken. You see, it's a whole different approach. You have to give an answer. You have to know halacha l'maisa. Now, the Polisher world stressed Bekiyot more than Litta, but they already, Pilpul was sharpening the mind, chilukim, subdivisions. There was more broad learning, but also a much deeper approach. What we popularly call pilpul. The Litvisher approach, I don't have to tell you. Go to a Litvisher yeshiva, a kid of 13, 14, 15, if he learns 30 blot a year, he's doing okay. But those 30 blot, he analyzes it, al hamakom. It's different than the Polish analysis. Polish analysis is broader. Reb Chaim limited to the sugya in front of you. Depth, nothing to do with halacha l'maisa. The yeshivas in Litta, nashim, nizikin, almost nothing else. And I can tell you, b'didi ha'viyuvda, I'm revealing all my secrets at my age, I don't want to keep any secrets yet. I can tell you something fascinating. I don't know why, maybe I was a good kid, a smart kid. So a lot of people involved in the administration, I'll use the word befriended me. I told you, Reb Shmuel Leibzah, it's very close to Norman B. Abrams, the legendary Norman B. Abrams that Ben, you never heard about, but Charlie knows more or less who I'm talking about. You didn't know him either.
I knew him very well. He lived very close to me.
Ah, so you knew him from Washington Heights, okay. Wow, wow, wow. Good. So Norman Beats, I'm going to tell you the story. At 57, the Rav would decide what Masechet the Yeshiva's learning. And the Rav decided we're learning Sanhedrin. I'm a happy kid. I'm going into the Rav Shir. Going to learn Sanhedrin. And Mr. Abrams, well, I don't know what the reason we're talking. Mr. Abrams says to me, "Oh, Arnold, you don't know how upset some of the Rosh Yeshiva are." I say, "Mr. Dennis, what do you mean?" And he said, "He had a slight accent, remember?" And he said, "You know, his father was the Mashgiach of Lamsha. His father, Rabbi Avraham Pachter. He took the Pachter, when he came to work, it was Pachter. People made fun of that name. So he took the name, officially changed his name, Abrams, in honor of his father. Avraham Pachter, Norman Abrams." So I said, "Well, what do you mean? And he tells me, Rabbi Anish, do you remember Rabbi Yehuda Leib Anish? He was at Telza. He said, Rabbi Anish was just in my office. He said, how can I teach Sanhedrin? I never heard Sheyurim in Telza on Sanhedrin. You follow? And see, this is the literature. Whoever learned Sanhedrin? And Charlie, I'll tell you more. I graduate the yeshiva. I go into the rabbinate. I think I told you the story. I believe I told it. I relive it. And if you don't believe me, yes, Reb Heschel Shechter. He still tells the story. He was an eyewitness. At my wedding, I spoke in learning. The Rav and Bray member and hugged me, kissed me. That I write in my book, he embraced me because no one will believe he kissed me. He never got it from his father. And Abrams went crazy, told Dr. Belkin. So but he says, the first opening for, you're it. Within a few months, I get a telegram and the rabbinate come to see Dr. Belkin. And Dr. Ichbinach, Mamana, Rosh Yeshiva, Sushan, etc., etc. And he says to me, pays me a compliment. I heard that in Lower Marion, Balakinla, whatever term I use, Philadelphia, Winfield, you give a shear in Moed Katan. I said, correct. He said, who taught you Moed Katan? Das nicht gelernt in Yeshiva. You follow the thinking. Rebbeinu Shalom, if I would only teach what they taught me in Yeshiva, I would have been retired from teaching 60 years ago. Yeshiva gave me a derech. But Rebbeinu Shalom, I haven't stopped learning one day. One day I haven't stopped. Graduate school gave me a derech. You don't go to school to get money. You get to school to develop an approach how to learn. Learning? It's you, 724. You see the difference? The literature world, this is why, we'll come to it, Mir. Neil, what do you know about me in 1930? Were you there, Ben? My Rebbe, Reb Neuch Bernstein, became a millionaire. He won $50. Are you aware of it? The $50, the Reb Nesson C. Finkel is a genius. Never taught you this in Lakewood. He, what did you have to do? The three bubbas, and Yevamot and Ktuvot, if I'm not mistaken, 1 year Bekiyot. Bekiyot? No one ever heard the word Bekiyot. But Reb Nathan Zvi Finkel saw that. Reb Yehuda Laser, it's Reb Yehuda Laser Finkel. He was already Rosh Yeshiva, I'm Nathan Zvi's son, with the Mira Rosh Yeshiva. He announced the drive. Anyone who will pass this goal will get $50. A number started, not everyone finished. But one of those who finished the covered was Reb Noach Bornstein. Do you remember Reb Noach Bornstein from Yeshiva? The name, at least, the name. His son Reb Shmuel Zichrusecha Tzadik Levracha taught in Yeshiva afterwards. We were very friendly. We were all in the Bronx together, and I was like an oldham role model to some of these young men, sons of the Shanghai crowd. Reb Noach Bornstein was never in Shanghai. He reached Japan, and he already was a Nilui Atsum, and he was able to go to Canada. From Canada, he came to America and taught in YU and got lost in America. The greatest Talmud of the Briska Rav, and I told you, the Briska Rav, when American Rabbanim visited him, the Briska Rav got hysterical. My best Talmud is Fashvunkin geworden in America. He disappeared in America. Where is he today? Whoever heard of him, you should have been the greatest gone. But all right, privately I'll tell you, the Rav understood of Noach Bornstein. And America, it left him, it didn't inspire him, we'll put it that way. So what Reb Meir Shapiro attempted to do was to bridge the various concepts of learning, to have more than just pupil, more than just Bekiyot, more than just Reb Chaim, but to attempt to balance it out in Chachmei Lublin. And did it succeed? To a certain degree. The Bekiyot was overwhelming. And we'll see later what was required to get into the yeshiva, what you had to know. They didn't just take anyone, but he had, again, a broader vision than just a narrow yeshiva. And his dream, wow, if this could have worked out, it needs time, it needs rebellion, it needs years. But he got started. One of the things he did, and this is many anecdotes and stories, as the yeshiva was getting off the ground, he visited the Litvish yeshiva. That's the famous story with Rodden, that he would spend a week in Rodden, and from there he'd go on to Mir and Slabodka. He had a whole itinerary, and that's where he contacts the Chafetz Chaim. I'm going to be in Rodden for this Shabbat. Can I be your guest? And the Chafetz Chaim says, with pleasure, Kavod Gadol. Then he found out the Chafetz Chaim's wife sits next to him at the Sudat Shabbat. It's a Mishnah in Ketubot. And he writes to the Chafetz Chaim, could they eat separately that Friday night? And the Chafetz Chaim said, no, I'm obligated to my wife, and the Maram Shapiro could not visit the Chafetz Chaim because Hasidic people sat separately. I just got an email this morning, I printed it out, that a YU graduate has just become a Hasidic Rebbe. I don't know whether he will sit separately. I have to read the whole article, but my Talmud wrote to me, YU now produces Hasidic Rebbe. All right, I boast, produced tzaddikim. When the newspapers interviewed me, who is Yitzhak Kogan getting out of Leningrad, I said the tzaddik of Leningrad. I said it. I don't know what else to say. The next morning, I couldn't believe it. Every Israeli newspaper had tzaddik mi Leningrad higia, and whenever they referred to Yitzhak, he should live and be well. He's back in Russia. It's a whole story. He's a great individual, but his overwhelming majority of his descendants live in Israel, so I forgive him for having to go back and build a shul in Moscow. But the tzaddik, and whatever they refer to him, had tzaddik mi Leningrad, put a footnote in, crowned tzaddik by Aaron Rakefet. So he visited Mir, and there are endless stories. The students didn't have their tzitzit sticking out, and they asked him why, and he asked, why don't they go with the Talis Katan? There are many versions to the story, but essentially it seems the wise guys in Mir said, we don't want to embarrass those who don't wear tzitzit. And later, when he got back to Lublin, he sent a package of 50 pairs of tzitzit to give out to the students. I don't know if it's true or not, but I've heard the story so many times, I imagine it is true. What he did when he came back, he said, I visited the Litvish yeshiva. I saw the student. I saw the rebellion. He said, Tocha lo kabaro, he said, the Litvish Rabbanim, the Rosh Yeshiva, their inside is not like the outside. So they looked at him, you know, the Gemara, they looked at him, what do you mean? He says, when you look at them, they don't look Jewish. There's no little beards, no peyes, no bekisha, no gatel. Their insides, lamdanim, ufhakim, tzadikim, goinim, iluyim. And he was very, very impressed, and it's a very, very good vart. Now we come to the heart, to the Musa overtone. And here I have to say that Reb Hillel Zeidman, who I had the schut to actually know and taught his daughter, as I told you last week, he says something very insightful. He says, Chassidus was to Chachmei Lublin what Musa was to the Litvish Yeshivat. And let me analyze that. What does that mean? 120 years ago, bitter fights about Musa. They say Reb Yitzchok Chanan was opposed. They say Reb Tzvi Hirsch Rabinovich was opposed, his son. Reb Moshe Danishevsky, Slabodka Rav, was opposed. And the list goes on, and there were bitter battles. The battles were so strong that you'll take Tel's yeshiva was actually closed down for months because the battle within it just couldn't go on. There was no way to control the students, pro-Musa, anti-Musa. What was the heart of the Machlokes in one paragraph? It's an affront to learning. What? You learn Shas and Paiskim and that doesn't turn you into a good Jew? I have to waste time on Musa Sparum? I have to go sit in the Musa Klois? Have to analyze my subconscious? What are you talking about? Lo nitna Torah l'malachei asharei. After World War I, there was absolutely no machloket about Musa. Slabodka Musa. Mir Musa. Tells Musa. Why? Because the assault on the Torah world intensified. After World War I, you saw what happened. Hundreds of thousands of people killed. Jews modern each other. Germany. The world is terrible. Aye, they're pressing us. Zionism, socialism, Bundesism, communism. We got to stand firm. And we need the Musa to give us the ability to stand firm. And I give you a simple example, a book that we referred to in the Sunday class, David Miller, Rabbi David Miller of the other end of the world, Oakland, adjacent to San Francisco, businessman, wrote two Svarim, one on Shabbos and one on Tarat Mishpacha, gave them away free. You read the introduction. He writes, how was I able to survive the big world, all the challenges? I say, Hinini me'od alai shemayim va'aretz. It's due to the fact that I studied Musa in Slabodka. And you see, there was a total recognition we need Musa to survive post-World War I. Machloket is over. It's not Beitul Torah. You learn a Musa Sefer. You can do more, but at least a half hour a day, sharpen your thought, your heart, your soul. Open it to Musa, to Machshava. Musa didn't enter Chachmei Lublin. It's Chassidus. What is Chassidus? Beautiful ideas. We dress differently. We look differently. It is infinitely harder for us to assimilate. And then when you take the Hasidic Sfarim, I'll give you a simple example. Just open up Reb Yitzchak Ginsburg's Sfarim, contemporary, now. It's a whole world of thought. Strengthens you. Everything, Ein Chadash, Tachat HaShemesh. We had these challenges. Have to remain firm, strong. Musa, no, Hasidus, Chol of Yisrael, spoke about that in the other class. Why are we so makbid, a chassid? I mean, Ribbono Shel Olam, a chabadnik comes to Kiev, the first thing he has to do is arrange for Chol of Yisrael in Kiev. What are you worried, Chol of Yisrael? Government supervision. But no, see, that's part of that Hasidic tinge, that Hasidic overtone. Fabrengen. Why do you need a Fabrengen? Man sitzt, man trinkt, man tracht, man lacht, tell stories. You know, but it creates the feeling Enash Anshei Shlomeinu. Mm-hmm. Chassidus. So much more. It adds, it strengthens pride. And that's why in Chachmei Lublin, Chassidus took the place of Musa. What you had in Mir, Slabatka, you had in Chachmei Lublin. But what was practical and what was needed in Poland, Hasidic Poland, Lublin. Now, this also ties in with what I said last week or 2 weeks ago. What was unique about Chachmei Lublin, and Baruch Amstel wrote to me a shoot off of Vishnitz. I have to read it all, but I think Rabbi Menachem Mendel Hager, Vishyavar, that he had a building for yeshiva for his bacharim. But you see, every other Hasidic court, if they had a yeshiva, even had their own building, it was for Enash, Anshlei Shlomeinu. You didn't wind up in Chabad or Vishnitz or Ger in Sachchav unless you were a chassid of that Rebbe. In Chachmei Lublin, there was no one chassidus. Everyone was made to feel at home. The follow this was a different atmosphere. Everyone wore a gato. Everyone had a bekeshid. Everyone dressed in a chassidic fashion. Everyone had prayers in a chassidic fashion. But this one was a gera, this one was a ruzhina, this one was a vishnitsa. Freedom of choice. Everyone welcome. See, he's a terrific visionary. Terrific individual of Meir Shapiro. Vision way beyond the moment. Now, there was something else. Something else. 1 second, is that Shoshani?
Yes.
Do me a favor. Go into my office. Open up the office. On the desk, you'll see a box with a newspaper in it. That's for you. It's a eulogy of a Talmid Muvhak of Ma Shoshani, for whom you are named. Do you read modern Hebrew or not? I hope so. You're a citizen of the state. Take that newspaper. It's a gift for you from the Rebbe. Okay? I underline Shoshani in the newspaper.
Thank you so much. Tadaraba. Appreciate it so
show
much.
Your face so they'll see you around the world and know that there is a Ma Shoshani. Do you know who Ma Shoshani? Tells me his name is Shoshani. He's gone through. Where did you go to high school?
North Shore Hebrew Academy.
Where
high school.
Did you go to college?
Yeshiva University.
He had all these rebbeim, and no one told them your last name. They should shake. You know who Shoshani was? We don't know until today. You know how much research has been done? He showed up in France after World II. The man knew Kol HaTorah Kula, everything. And general knowledge, he taught, he inspired, he wound up in Switzerland. No one knew who, it was no Ma Shoshani. The research seems to indicate, there's a doctorate done now, that his name was really Perlman. He was a Litvische Ilui who came to Israel, Palestine, studied in with Rav Kook when Merkaz HaRav began, and he wound up surviving. He was back in Europe. He somehow survived the Holocaust, wound up in France. Never revealed his name. No Torah Kalakulo. And he inspired some of the young minds in France that became Gedolei Yisrael, Gedolei Machshava, including, who just died, Rabbi Shalom Rosenberg, Rabbi, Doctor, Professor. He was a Talmud of Ma Shoshani. So here he goes through 12 years of education, or I should say 16, with the greatest rebbeim in the world, and no one called attention to whom he is named. I am upset with my colleagues at YU, and you can tell them so. Now.
Thank you so much, Toda Rabba. I appreciate it.
Nothing to appreciate.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Toda Rabba.
Grow up. Let's live up to your name.
Thank you.
Okay. He's a good kid. He's a madrich in getting smicha, and he's a madrich in Torah Tshraga. Okay, remember to take the newspaper. Yomo's showing him. Baruch Hashem. Oh, Shoshani. When I heard the name, I was shaking. This Shoshani, all the French rebbeim I taught with in Michalar, and I got to know, when they would mention his name, they would shake. And it seems he had this tremendous impact on the intellectual development of these young people who would have gone on to become scientists or else medical doctor. They all became Mabitzei Torah, and they helped bring about in the whole reawakening of French Jewry, basically non-Sfardic French Jewry, because the Sfardim already had that, but the Ashkenazim were totally assimilated. And you can give one name after another who had this great impact, and Rabbi Rosenberg was very, very special. All right, anyway, he did something else. You see, you have Rashi Yeshiva, so let's say, I'll give an example why you in my time. You had Rabbi Noach Bornstein, you had Rabbi Henoch Fishman, you had Rabbi Shmuel Lezer Volk, but you see, all these rebbeim, all they were involved with was Habatzat Torah. You had the Rav. The Rav, he gave the shir, and the shir, you would walk out and say, all Rav Soloveitchik knows is Shasim Paiskim. He's just like Rav Chaim, doesn't know anything else. But you knew the Rav, philosophy, rabbinical council, involved OU, college campuses, Kashrut, testified before the United States Congress Committee. Read my first volume on the Rav, you'll see. And there was so much more to him. And a speaker, fabulous speaker, Yiddish, English, Hebrew, I imagine German, Polish, probably Russian. What ability. The students were exposed to Rav Meir Shapiro. Rav Meir Shapiro, a gong, a shtat rav, a good at Yisrael, an ideologian, a public speaker, Shem, member of the parliament. That too was part of Chachmei Lublin. In his talks and others, there was a much broader commitment than just learning. And students came out of it with a desire to influence, to be communal leaders, to be rabbanim, to teach, preach, lead. The few years that the school existed, later you see people who came out of it. There's no better example than Pinchas Hirschsprung of Montreal. He came to salvation, miracles. Very fascinating individual. My Talmud from 50 plus years ago, in the early years of BMT, married his daughter, became his son-in-law. What do you know about Rabbi Pinchas Hirschsprung? I can tell you, my Talmud was an Eid Neman. I've heard it from others, but a Talmud, you put a pin through the Gemara, and he could tell you on every page in Shas which word that pin fell through. But he was much more than that. He comes out of, gets to Kobe, Japan. Senpo Sugiharo. You know the story. I think I told you how he got to Kobe, Japan. In his autobiography of those years, I now quote in what I wrote on the Rabbinic Authority. So they go to visit Reb Chaim Moser. He's already in Vilna with a few other Talmidim of Chachmei Lublin. And they asked Reb Chaim Moser what to do. Should they take the Senpo Sugiharo visas? And Reb Chaim Moser says, no, you have to see the whole conversation. I have recorded word by word. And they walk out, and these Hasidic younger lights speak among themselves, no, as a Litvish Rav. If he says not to go, we have to do the opposite. This is documented. I heard this, but I now can document it. And they took the visas. And he winds up in Kobe. From Kobe, he was world famous already, and Ilui. They bring him to Montreal. In Montreal, this man was a public figure. And fascinatingly, he built the whole educational system for women. The Beis Yaakov of Montreal is named in his memory. And you see, he was a shtat rav. He didn't isolate himself. This is not Rav Noach Bornstein. This is not Rav Hanach Fishman. This is someone attempting to emulate Rav Meir Shapiro. And you can go one by one. I'll give you more names down the road. But these all became Gaonim, but Shtat Rabbanim with responsibility for Klal Yisrael. And this they picked up from the Maram Shapiro. His personage, his gestalt, the whole environment, this wasn't a little isolated yeshiva. It was much, much more. Now here's the saddest part. While all this was happening, he realized he was making a mistake. What am I saying, making a mistake? Why did I build in Poland? Why didn't I build in Palestine? And here you have to understand these years, 25, 26, 30, 31, 32, etc. Zionism was gaining strength every day. Jews are suffering. Anti-Semitism. Hitler. What happened in Germany. And Zionism is affecting... Yeah, Slabodka opens a branch in Chevron. It's affecting everyone. I'm quoting him now. He told his closest associates, I couldn't build in Israel, in Palestine, I should say. Couldn't build in Palestine. I have no Talmidim there. They don't know me. There's a system there, you know. They're not going to let an outsider come in. I don't have to tell you why Slabodka went to Hebron. They were afraid of opening in Jerusalem. But maybe I should have built there. He was dreaming. Of course, one thing I can tell you, it would have been a lot easier for me to raise the money if I was building in Palestine. And boy, he hit the nail on the head, because in America and Germany and Britain and South Africa, etc., people would have given twice as much. It's not just the yeshiva, but it's Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And this was a burning issue. Even Agudat Yisrael, Keren HaYishuv, you follow? And he said, I quote, if I'll build in Israel, I should say again, Palestine, he says, I have experience. Achshav rechashti li nisayon. V'ani mekaveh lehakim b'Yerushalayim yeshiva asher binyaneha yevayeshu et binyanei ha'universita. And that's a powerful statement. And Baruch Hashem, I have to tell you, in Israel today, you look at the Bnei Brak, at some of the yeshiva buildings, You look in Hamar at some of the yeshiva buildings. You look here at Hebron. You look here at the Gris campus. Put it together. We are quite impressive. We have nothing to be ashamed about. Ramat HaGolan, building after building. Wow. Campus, yeshiva, nothing to be ashamed about. And Rakepet says, don't make it too big. We can't be like Hebrew U, 10,000, 20,000 students. You can't have a yeshiva like that. Yeshiva, in my humble opinion, you hit 1,000 students, that's it. Go build another yeshiva. You have faculty, you need warmkeit, warmth, consideration, knowledge. All right. While all this is happening, we have no mazel. He's planning to go to Israel right before Pesach. Who chashav lalot l'eretz Yisrael l'chag ha-Pesach tarchad, 1934. And he's planning it. He's working on it. No mazel. Long before, months before, Cheshvan, it's 1933, he takes ill. They don't really have antibiotics, and he dies. His death has been legendary, described time and again, books have been written. He had no children, and he asked for the yeshiva boys to dance around his bed, singing. And that's the way he died. Yatsa nishmato. B'tahara. Yeshiva boys, like his children, dancing around his bed. The funeral was massive, and gedolei harabeim v'harabanim hispidu alto. Rab Menachem Zemba, who was the Gaon of Warsaw. We spoke about him in class yesterday in relation to his nephew. The Reish Rav of Aaron Levine, the Gera Rebbe, Reb Moshe Chaim Lau, Chief Rabbi's great, Chief Rabbi Yisrael Meir's, what's it, the hymn? His grandfather. His grandfather. And he was the one who succeeded Mayor Lublin in Piotrków. And massive, massive funeral. Even in his death, he did something very big for the yeshiva. Life insurance policy. He had a big life insurance policy, a wealthy man. Didn't leave it to his children. He left it to the yeshiva. And that too, at least, it gave the yeshiva a push that at least immediately after his death, they were able to cover the budget. Now, the biggest problem in the world began, how do you find a successor to such an individual? And look, this goes on all the time. Bernie Lander, everyone used to say, Turo will not survive Bernie Lander. He was Turo. Turo was Bernie Lander. Bernie Lander, one of a kind. Also, about Bernie Lander, I can say we were intimate friends. I didn't just know him. We were intimate friends. You take the Rav. Can you really find a successor to the Rav? But you see, what happens is, all right, you're going to have to make your peace with the reality afterwards. And somehow, lo alman Yisrael. They never really found one individual who could carry Yachal, Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, on his shoulders the way Reb Moshe, the way Reb Meir Shapiro carried it. But they acted very quickly, and a board of directors was formed. First of all, the Biyana Rebbe, Reb Meishela Friedman, also from the Rishina dynasty, a cousin to the Chatkava Rebbe. This is Biyana, not Biyana, Bavava, I should say. No, excuse me, he was the Biyana Rebbe. It says here Biyana. No, yeah. He was the Biyana Rebbe in Krakow. So he sort of became chairman of the board. He looked after the yeshiva. He visited the yeshiva. A board was formed of the most famous Rabbanim, Rav Menachem Zember, the Tribunerov, Rav Dov Ber Wiedenfeld. Later, I can show you the house he lived in Shaarei Chesed. Have you ever seen the house? It has a mikveh downstairs. I don't know if it's still usable. It should be checked. It's two blocks away from where you live. I know the street as well. It's on the street where they have the takeout place that's only open Thursday, Friday. Well, what's it called?
Hakalir
is not that street. It's the side. That's the side. But the street, it doesn't matter. It's right. It's around the corner from where BMT began, Rehova Barmanel. It's mamish around the corner. So the Chibina Rav was ashamed of her. He served on the board of directors. And I don't have to tell you, when you have the name Reb Menachem Zember, Reb Shlomo Leeger of the Admor mi Lublin, and you had people who cared. But the question was, who would be Rosh Yeshiva? There were some appointments made and it didn't work. In other words, a Rosh Yeshiva following of Meir Shapiro, of Velt Gaon, and someone who knew what was going on in the world. The one who really succeeded him was the Kuzikla Rav. I'll give you the name, Rav Shmuel Tzvi Fruma. Rav Heschel Shechter quotes him quite often. He later dies in the Holocaust, Lo Aleinu. But he became, we'll talk about it in more detail down the line, but he really became the Rosh Yeshiva, the one that had the most influence on what went on a day-to-day basis in the yeshiva. He was a Talmud Muvhak of the Sachtshava, of the Avnei Nezer, Reb Avram Bornstein, and he was a Jew, Harifet, Bikiyot, played a major role following the death of Reb Meir Shapiro on the day-to-day basis. The other people were involved more in the financial part, and seeing that there was funding and they brought in Balabatim, and the yeshiva somehow managed to survive more or less in dignity. Now, following the Holocaust, a number of yeshivas sprang up over the world that used the name Chachmei Lublin. Montreal, Rav Hirschsprung. In Detroit, there was another Talmud, and I think the day school actually began. It can be checked out with people from Detroit. I believe the day school actually began called Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, and it morphed into a regular day school in Detroit. I've taught many students from that day school. You can go on and on. In Israel, in Bnei Brak, Rav Wuzner's yeshiva. Rav Wuzner is a Talmud of Chachmei Lublin, Rav Shmuel Wuzner, who an Adam Gadol, and he too called the yeshiva, and it's still called Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin until today. At one point, there was a survivor from the family, Rav Avraham Shapiro. It was a younger brother of Meir Shapiro. He organized in New York a support group graduates of Chachmei Lublin, people who had studied in Chachmei Lublin, and they continued to support the yeshiva or institutions, particularly in Israel, particularly Rav Wisner. But when all is said and done, we never really replaced Rav Meir Shapiro. One of a kind, and with the advent of Hitler, soon after his death, what went on in Germany, affecting Poland, the hatred, the anti-Semitism, ultimately the slaughter, it never really allowed the yeshiva to blossom as it should have. It was cut down in its youth, if I could view it as a tree that was growing and blossoming. It was cut down when there only were a few branches. Now, I want to refer you to my work on Bernard Revel. Page 124, what is the word called? Bernard Revel, Builder of American Jewish Orthodoxy, Aaron Rothkopf, first edition, two more editions, Aaron Rothkopf, pages 124 and 125. And these are interesting pages that can create a difficult feeling in the art scroll world. When Yeshivas Yitzchok Chanan went on the map and Rabbi Revel and the publicity and the high school and the college, it became world famous. You got to remember, Jews are constantly coming to America. Jews have family in America. There's now newspapers. There's direct communication to a certain degree. And Gedolei Yisrael, who came to America on fundraising, inevitably, all of them gave shiurim, guest lectures, at yeshiva and yeshiva college. As you know from my work on silver, the only one who refused to give a shiur there was Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman. Outside of Rabbi Elchanan, everyone gave a shiur. Now, I list out all the people and I tell you where they're coming from, and you'll notice there is Rabbi Meir Shapiro, Rosh Yeshiva of the Chachmei Lublin Yeshiva in Lublin, Poland. What I don't write about, because I gave many, many names, I didn't get involved in individuals, but I just want to mention, generally speaking, all these Rosh Yeshiva, when they came to the yeshiva, at a certain point they stayed with the Revel family. The Revel family then was well-to-do, lived in a nice hotel. It wasn't, later it becomes a broken hotel and drug addiction, etc. I don't think the building exists today. 102 in Broadway, Broadmoor Hotel. And they spent time with the Revel family. So Mrs. Revel told me a very interesting comment, which with the passage of time I can appreciate more and more. She said, all these Rosh Yeshiva who came, you know, they were litvakin. My husband was totally at home with them. My Shemodachai, I mean, the Kovner Rav, Rav Abram Dobek Anna Shapiro, Rav Baruch Belevevich, Rav Baruch, I mean, you can go on and on. But she said, Rav Meir Shapiro, he was unique. This was a Rosh Yeshiva who was like a Hasidic rabbi in his dress, in his deportment. And she said, his visit left the biggest impression on the family, on the two boys. And I might add here, again, I can't say whether I'm absolutely right or not, but I want to add one part. I don't know how much you know about Dr. Belkin's two sons. And Mrs. Revel told me she can only have two children. Problems in life. Sometimes it's easy to have children, and sometimes it's difficult. And I've been through life, and I've seen both sides of the coin. And she told me, so of the two boys, Heschel inherited the genius ability. And he was a genius, interesting individual. Unfortunately suffered because his father was a public figure. And the old story with Mechanchim, they have time for everyone's children except their own, which has a lot of truth to it. It's not for now to go into it. Nor do I ever want to go into it, because ain't bayit asher ain't shamet. You can always find Gedolei Yisrael, and you'll see with the kids, not everything turned out the way they wanted. And Heschel had a lot of problems finding himself. And here his father was a Litvak, he was a Talmud Chacham, he was he might have been the first PhD, the first doctorate, it was a doctor of Hebrew literature they gave them, from Bernard Revel. He edited the Rambam and Hilchot Soita. I have it. It's a well-known sefer, quoted. Anyone gets involved with manuscripts, you have to refer to his Otsa HaSota, the editing of the Rambam of Hilchot Soita. You know what's interesting? He also got involved with Hasidut. And I wonder if that wasn't the result of Rav Meir Shapiro's visit. Because in the 30s, the 20s into the 30s, the only real Hasidic personality he could have met would be Rav Meir Shapiro. And he later published, I have Kuntresim that he published on Hasidus. He never really found his place in life. He wound up being the librarian in Gottesman Library. He knew Sfarim. He was had a photograph, a very good memory, like his father. Students didn't know how to appreciate him. He never married. No descendants. But I wonder if that interconnection isn't part of the Revel Maram Shapiro story, because it always rang in my ears how Sarah Travis Revel spoke about the deep impression that the Maram left. All right, I'm going to end the class with something unbelievable. B'didi Haviyuv, that happened to me. It ties all my worlds together. The late 1900s, a Talmud walks in, calls me, can I come to your classes? Yeah, just coming Aliyah from Australia. And for 2 years, he was a faithful student. Then he went back into business. I didn't know who he was. It turns out he was not a poor man who had done very well in Australia. And he wanted to adjust to Israel as a very wonderful son who's done very well in combining Torah and Hasidus, the PhD. Terrific, terrific family. So he arranged for me to be a scholar in residence in Australia. The year is 2000, I'm not going to spend a month there. And I didn't know the first thing about Australia. I have to speak, I'm arriving. The first big event the day after my arrival is Yom Yerushalayim. And it's a big Zionist community, I'm the guest of the Mizrahi. And I give a drasha. It's Minishamayim, this drasha I gave. I made more friends in one night than I ever made any other night in my life. Unknown to me, in Australia, the Mizrahi and the Chabad presence blend into one. Chabad built Australia, and they're all great Mizrahiites. And I gave a drasha, what am I going to talk about? So I remembered something the Rav said. And I quoted the Rav. And it was remembering something the Rav said about Rav Meir Shapiro and the Hasidic world. And I'll just give you a drop of the drasha. It's a perfect ending to this part of the outline of the life of Rav Meir. As I mentioned to you, there was a lot of criticism, a ground-laying ceremony. Who heard of such a thing? Go back to my shiur of yesterday where Rav Menashe Klein says, in Europe, up in Das Nicht Gesehen, we didn't see this in Europe. Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. Who heard of a ground-laying ceremony? More than that, these are the notes from my drasha in Australia. More than that, tzniut, whole concept. The first luchot, it's a tanchum, a famous medrash. The first luchot you did, kol, rash, 2 million people, 600,000 men. Big event. What happened to those luchot men? Broken. Nothing left. Pashat Kitisa. The second luchot, Bitsina, Hasinai, Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How do you make this big event shock the world? Who needs it? It's not for tzina. The luchot will be broken. Reb Meir Shapiro asked this very question when he got up to speak. He said, I know people will be criticizing me. What do we need this for? Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. We never heard about this before. Who am I to come along? And he said, yes, it's a very good question, but I'll give you an answer. And Rav Meir Shapiro quoted the Gemara in Zvachim, Daf Kuf Tet Zayin, Omer Aleph. And I'm paraphrasing the Gemara. Kishe nitna Torah li Yisrael hayakolo holech mi sofa lomad sofo. V'chom malche yovdei kachavim achazan ra'ada behechalatan. V'yomru shira. Then they all came together to Bilam HaRasha and said, what is this noise we hear? Why are we shaking? Well, why are we saying Shira? What's happening? Omar Lehem, Bilam said, Chemda Tore Yesh Lo Beveit Genasav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a beautiful gift, a beautiful Torah, a beautiful document in his treasures chests that has been hidden by him for 974 generations before the world was created. And he is giving that Torah to his children. And Rav Meir Shapiro, so why did the curse? Well, he knew it was going to be broken. He knew. No. First you have to give it the prachesia. You have to let the world know that there's a Torah, that there is a Jewish people, that there is a saga of our holiness and continuity and pride. Yes, it may not last, but the message will last. And we're coming together here. Matan Torah, ground-laying ceremony. Bifnei Am Ve'eda, we want the world to know. Am Yisrael Chai, we want the world to know there is a God. We want the world to know. Kudsha Berichu, Am Yisrael, and Torah, echad hu, we are one indivisible concept. Three chords that blend into one. Chut ha-meshulash that guarantees the continuity and dignity of the Torah people. And he went on, the Rav told this drasher over that yes, there are two obligations on a Jew. One, you observe quietly. But that's like every other religion in the world, a personal, individualistic concept. But a Jew also has Matan Torah Parchesia. All of Am Yisrael has to come. Tens of thousands of Jews in Poland and Lublin gathered together. This is the communal responsibility, the Am Yisrael's responsibility. This is our nation, our people. The Gentile world cannot understand this. They function only on one level. We function on two concepts of Matan Torah. And this is what Rabbi Meir Shapiro said to justify the groundbreaking ceremony. And I'll go one step further now. Vayehi Hayom, the Israeli army was so hard pressed that they had to call up a guy named Aaron Rakefet for basic training. And here I am in basic training, 1976, and it's Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And that morning we're supposed to have our lecture from the Education Corps, the officer, and 250 soldiers are collected together, Rubam Olim Chadashim, all older Russians, Ukrainians, South Americans, Americans, Canadians, wow, what a crowd, all older. We were in the age bracket of 35 to 39, and the Katsin Chinuch gets up to speak. I'm reliving it, and it all happened. He starts the same lecture he gave a week before. I was ready to sleep with my eyes open. You can't sleep. They walk up and down and wake you up. But I figured I heard the lecture. What's the big deal? The Russians, I didn't, you know, Russian mentality. Shamanu, we heard. The poor idiot gets off, walks off. Then I see the commanders, the master sergeant, they're conferring. And they come over to me. I couldn't believe it. Until then, Chayal, they don't give you a name. It's to break you, form you into a unit. Chayal. Kvot HaRav, Anachnu Yodim Shata Yodea Eich Lahavir Sheyur. Tatsil etamatsav. I found out later the master sergeant had a girlfriend in Michola. He knew exactly who I was from A to Z. So I said, all right, this is a tragedy. I got up. I gave the talk of my life. And what was the talk of my life? Chodesh Nisan, Rosh Chodesh. What is Korban Pesach? What is Korban Pesach? Why did we have to bring a Korban Pesach before we left Egypt? Why was it a Tanai Kodem Lema'aseh? Korban Pesach, read the Mishnah Pesach. Hundreds of families joined together on one lamb. How much can you eat? Ben, Korban Pesach at the end of the meal, Afikoyman, a Kazayat. How much can you eat? You're going to be, where will you be Pesach? In America? In Lakewood?
Yep.
Your son going with you?
Yep.
You're a sinner against that poor boy, that's all I can say. But okay, you don't have a choice. What can I say? So, why? Because Avraham Avinu, I raised the question of the Mishnah, Rabbi Huda Rozanz, in his Drush Sefer, Avraham Avinu, was he Jewish or not? Of course he was Jewish. Well, if he's Jewish, why do you need another Kritat Brit with Moshe Rabbeinu? Ah, so the Prashat HaDarachim explains the Rav made a whole drush, a whole drush in memory of his father, a Yotzai drush on this Prashat Rachim. He explains, Avraham Avinu was a Jew on one level, the individual level. No different than any other religion in the world. When you're going out of Egypt, you're going to receive Eretz Yisrael, it's a new level. Am Yisrael, B'nei Yisrael, Adat Yisrael, the communal interaction called Pesach, you must have to show the ability to join together on a Korban Pesach. Then you're ready to become total Jews. Avraham Avinu represents the first Matan Torah. Korban Pesach represents the second Matan Torah of the Ruchot, where, excuse me, just the opposite. Korban Pesach represents the first Matan Torah, where it's given publicly, Am Yisrael. But afterwards, we have the second Matan Torah, which takes us back to Avraham Avinu, the individuality. And then I went further, how happy I am to be in Australia, where I see another part of Am Yisrael, Jews who are concerned with Eretz Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael, Jews who are supporting and your children learning, coming, settling, building, where we can merge together and synthesize the public Matan Torah, the private Matan Torah, the Kritat Brit of Avraham Avinu, and with Moshe Rabbeinu, the ultimate achievement of the Korban Pesach. Little did I realize that, wow, min ha-shamayim zachiti, what a drasha, what a response. Mizrahi, Chabad, Hasidus, Tavka Chabad. You know what came out of that night? One of the people listening to me had been my student in Michlava. And she married a guy named Yosef Gutnik. Sterner called, her husband was in business in Europe. She said, Yosef, you come back here immediately. You got to hear my Rebbe speak. And boy, he listened to his wife, and then he heard me. His driver, 6'10", Australian, handsome, good. This is your, whatever you have to go someplace, you contact my driver. He has my orders to take you, bring you. And this guy, this guy, didn't know what to do for me. He thought like I stepped from outer space, an angel from heaven. Boy, I spent a month in Australia. Af Ali Yidden gesagt, how I was treated and honored. Wow, what an experience. This drasha, Maram Shapiro, the Rav, Matan Torah, Korban Pesach, which is upon us. Are there any questions? What did we do today? Okay, we finished out a review in general of Chach Lublin, the yeshiva, the uniqueness, the attempt to be more than just a Pelisher approach, a little bit of Galicia, a little bit of Litta. Oy, the tragedy at the end, see, that breaks the heart. The man worked so hard, it wore the body down. Bernard Revel dies. How old was he? 55, 1885, 1940. Told his wife in his deathbed, I hope you've lived with me long enough to know you don't judge life by the amount of years, but by the amount of achievement. And at least Bernard Revel, we're sitting here, his cousin is the voice you're hearing, and it lives on. Maram Lublin, what Hitler did to us, what Hitler did to us. It is sad. But okay, we have to go further in strength and dignity, pride, with the little seichel reaching out, Am Yisrael Chai, Be'ezrat Hashem. Chag Kasher v'sameach. Are there any questions? No questions. Open it up to the world. Rabbi Twesky, how do you feel? Was it taken care of already?
Recording stopped.
Yeah, wait, he didn't speak. 1 second. Okay. Rabbi Twesky, everything's behind you?
Yes, I had the surgery, and I'm now recovering at home. I came home March 2nd, came home March 9th, and they said 6 weeks recovery. So I'm going through the recovery, thank God.
You should have a refuah shleima, a karov, and we have to thank the medical process. You follow the progress that they've made in that field is indescribable.
Correct.
Halavai, our Jewish kep, if they don't want to be Gedolei Yisrael, let them devote themselves to medical research, not the high-tech in Silicon Valley and all that goes with the bank and all that we have here of the demonstrations. Wow. And you see how hard it rained today? Thursday, they declared a day of anger of another day. It's going to be a beautiful day. Everything is with them. And poor Rakefet, I can't even get out of my house. You have no idea how they block us. And it's a Rachmanis on the young police and Magavnikim. They're standing there. There's no bathroom. It hurts me. But I one thing I'll say, whenever I walk by the police, the army, I give them a big thank you and a smile. If they would scratch the surface, I'd start telling them stories about my basic training, my service in the army, what happened as a result of the talk. I didn't tell you what happens afterwards. That's another hour and a half of story. And the Mossad in Russia, Baruch Hashem, a kid came from America at the age of 31, barely speaking modern Hebrew, and he did some nice things here, I'll put it that way. But I'm very happy to hear Refuah Shleima. I meant to ask you yesterday, but by the time it got over and I finished out with all that, we still haven't solved the problem. But the next year would be very fascinating with Rav Moshe's next tshuva. Oh boy, the Rav Gerim, I have material. Can I inherit? The Torah is so exciting, you can never get bored. Yitzchak, it's not like a novel where Malka reads novels. I say, how many novels can you read? The plots basically all repeat themselves. Ultimately, it's like the old movies. They redo a movie, this actor, that actor. The plot is the same. But Tyra, there's no end. Everywhere you go is so interesting and fascinating. It's life before our eyes. Jack, I have a question for you. Stuart Rosenberg, the big machlokes over his shul. You know who I'm talking about? The conservative temple in Toronto. Stuart Rosenberg, the name mean anything to you?
You're talking about what happened decades ago?
Yeah. Was that involved theological issues, or it was basically only how you run a shul with the new generation? You don't know. Okay.
I don't know if I go public on it was very unpleasant. I was not involved, but I've met people who were involved, and you're getting it second, third hand. It was a very personal thing, I believe, but I could be wrong.
Right.
I think that Jack is right. It had nothing to do with theology.
That's what I'm saying. Right.
That it was a personal thing. He made a mistake in going on Shabbaton, and the man who took his place was a ambitious human being, and that's what happened.
Uh-huh. All right, because someone mentioned to me about the Machlokes, and that's what I recall. But there was nothing of a theological nature. It was more how
when
we
you look up in Wikipedia and you see the things that Stuart Rosenberg had achieved.
Right.
He really was a person. He put out two books, one on the theology of Jewish life in America, one on Judaism for Goyim to understand what it's about. He was really a productive person.
Right. He wanted, he built a day school. Does that day school still exist, a conservative? You don't know.
That's not, I wouldn't know. That Jack would know.
Right. And Jack doesn't know either. But he wanted to open a branch of JTS in Toronto to produce conservative rabbis. Interesting. Was he a Shema Mitzvot in his own life, a Shema Shabbat? I would imagine so, Stuart Rosenberg. But interesting. All right. Anyway, it's ancient history. Does the temple still exist, Jack? Do you know? Or?
It's a major building.
That's what it says. It calls it a cathedral. They call it a cathedral to rival Holy Blossoms. You follow the Reform temple. And I had the incident. The first time I flew in my life was June 1961. I'm getting smicha, and I'm flying for a tryout in Guelph, Ontario. And on the plane to Toronto, who was sitting next to me? The rabbi of the Reform Temple.
Gunther Plaut, I believe.
Yeah, I don't want to mention his name. I'll tell you why. Gunther Plaut, you're correct. But I ate treif. He ate treif. And I had kosher. I ordered kosher. And we're sitting next to each other. And he started a whole discussion with me. Why do I want to mention his name? I understand later in life he became much more traditional and he became kosher. And I know he became more traditional because I was in Israel already, but he was fighting a battle from minimal Shulchan Aruch for the Reform movement. And the very... Plaut, yeah.
And so what was his battle? The battle for?
A minimal Shulchan Aruch for the Reform movement. And the fact that he wanted a minimal Shulchan Aruch shows you he's not Reformed. People screamed at him, what, you want a minimal Shulchan Aruch? Then you're not a Reformed Jew. A Reformed Jew has no Shulchan Aruch. Halach is not binding. So he did become more traditional. But I'll never forget, on that plane ride, I'm eating kosher, and here's the Reformer. And when he told me he's rabbi of Holy Blossoms Temple, Zerah Kodesh, Holy Blossom. When you say it in English, it sounds like a Protestant church. I was sitting next to him, I was shaking. Holy. And anyway, you should know that I didn't get the shtela. They needed a kobonik. I could barely lay in. But one thing they said to me, it was Pashat Hukar, I remember the drasha I preached, it's not for now, it's a powerful drasha, and they said, Rabbi, we will tell you that we never heard a rabbi speak so well. I was a kid of 23, and it was a drasha on Pashat Hukar. But all right, Baruch Hashem, I didn't get the shtela, and I wound up in Lower Merion Synagogue, and I survived Lower Merion, and as they say, the rest is history. And I'm Baruch Hashem, I'm still doing good things and accomplishing mitzvot, so I'm very, very happy and very pleased. And I have two grandchildren making a major contribution. One, as you know, developing the Pituach Machshirei Lechima, the Lavi, the troop carrier. He's got an award for his work on it, like his father got an award for his work on Merkavah 2 and Merkavah 3. So that young man is one grandson, and from another family, I have another grandson who works for Raphael, and I've told you more than once. He took the job, not that paid the most. Everyone ran after him. He's a genius. He's not a dummy, this kid. And he took the job where he can make the major contribution. And when I ask him, Nachem, where are you working? What are you doing? He says, Saba, you know I cannot tell you. And there's a cute story here. They asked him, would you give up your American citizenship if we asked you? So he said, not for a small job, but for a big job, I'll be very happy to give it up. They loved the answer. I don't know whether he had to give it up yet, but I'm positive it's going to reach a point where he will have to give it up. And my other grandson, his book on tanks is coming out this week. He promised me a copy hot off the press. And he showed me in the introduction, he thanks his grandparents, Harav Dr. Hulu Vahulu. What the heck does a rabbi doctor have to do with the history of tanks? But okay, it shows an interesting relationship between a grandfather and a grandson, Kanayin Hara. and Zayn Kinder, I also have a lot of nachat. They're 8 o'clock of the Chatam Sefer. So I can go around boasting I'm a nobody, but I'm a cousin to Dr. Revel, and I have grandchildren, 8 o'clock of the Chatam Sefer, and I have other grandchildren, great nephews of Reb Moshe Elephant, Reb Mordechai Elephant, you follow? Rabbi Elephant had no children, but his sister had children, and my grandson married a granddaughter, a great niece of Reb Mordechai Elephant. And Kanein Hara, they have 5 boys, and Tikvati, that each one will be great, and Teira, Yirat Shemayim, whatever they want to do in life, Kol, everything is open to children. I just wrote to America. I have a Talmud who listens to me, who's fighting Torah Sorah, that the Rosh Yeshiva should have be more open and introduce courses in Yirat Shemayim and Machshava, and children should have more choice. So they write back to him that we cannot be, what you're writing is critical of the Rosh Yeshiva. We cannot show them criticism.
He said the questions are valid, but they sound like...
Right. Like the questions are valid, but it sounds like you are being critical, right?
Yes.
And we cannot criticize. So I wrote back to him, look, I don't know what's going on in America, but in Israel I am very proud. What has happened here since I came in, since 53 years ago, there's so much choice today. So many different types of yeshiva, the high schools, the yeshiva chesda, for the women, the upanot. It's unbelievable what is happening. And they're totally analyzing. If you read the Alonim, you'll see, read Olam Katan. You'll see they're analyzing, is it good? Are we achieving? Can we have more? Can we have different? And a kid today, you have so much, you want to go to high school with a Hasidic overtone? Fine. You want to go to high school that'll encourage you to play music? Fine. You want to go to a high school where you can play basketball? Fine. It is choice. That's so important. And for the women, I never saw anything like it. You want to dance? You can have a whole program of Yirat Shemayim and where you can dance, develop concepts of dancing, self-expression, and beyond everything. That's only one part of it. For the women, social work. I see what they do. Programs where you can do Sherit Lumi in hospitals, medicine. You want to be a nurse. You want to be a doctor, a physician assistant. So much is available. And that's the upside. The downside is Lapid. Now you understand why Yair Lapid doesn't sleep at night. They are worried, and they should be worried that the Datiyim and the Haredim are going to be an absolute majority in the country within 10 to 20 years. It's not the ancient, it's not Yemot HaMashiach, even some of the 11 Mashiachs at Kainu. It's tangible already. And I can understand they're losing the state that they believe in, and their state is only a result of anti-Semitism. Don't forget Rakef Itzvon. I think it's good. Lapid goes to Yad Vashem when he becomes prime minister. So he's making a statement. I have no Judaism in me, no continuity, no future, but I'm forced to remain a Jew because of anti-Semitism. So we have a state where there's no anti-Semitism. This is not what Torah is about. This is not what the state of Israel is about. Where the continuity of Torah, of Am Yisrael, Torah Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, our belief in Mashiach that kept us going. This is why we're here. And we have to go. When I'm elected prime minister, I'll go directly to the Kotel L'Hadot L'Kaddish Baruch Hu to tie myself together with yesteryear as I dream of the future. I'm busy preaching today. What's going on? Yitzchak, we're out of the rabbit. Pennsylvania's behind us. We'll leave Rabbi Twesky. You'll become Tolna Rebbe in your old age. You can start all over again. Are there any other questions? Okay. Yeah.
Rebbe, when you spoke about arranging the scholarly residence in Melbourne, were you referring to Arnold Roth?
No. Like Talmud here, I don't know if he wants his name mentioned, because I'll tell you, I did something else with this Talmud. I wrote to someone, I forgot what they asked me. They asked me why the Biyana Rebbe loves me, and etc., etc. So I wrote their reasons why. The Biyana Rebbe's father was my teacher 4 years, and the Biyana Rebbe and his parents ate in my house. The Biyana Rebbe's brother-in-law and sister are my Talmidim. So there are reasons why, you know. But there's another reason. There's someone who became my Talmud, and then he took me aside and says to me, I'm quoting word by word, he says, Rebbe, you're a Litvak, you won't understand me, but I need a Rebbe to talk to. And he says, the Lubavitcher Rebbe died, I need someone to replace him. Could you suggest someone? So I said, I'm sending you to the Biyana Rebbe. Never was a better shidduch made between that individual and the Biyana Rebbe. V'day l'chakima b'remiza. And when the Rebbe meets me, the Biyana, he hugs me, Baruch Hashem. People look at me, who are you? What are you? I once met his gabbai, it's a whole story. I have a bad streak in me, a Yetzirah, to enjoy life. So I meet the gabbai on my way to Machon Gol to teach, and he's walking with the Biyana, and they're coming back from davening, and I'm going to teach, and I love to walk. I was younger, I had the ability. And the walk through Yerushalayim, it's beautiful to walk through Yerushalayim in the morning, and the Biyana Rebbe hugs me, and we talk, and then the gabbai walks into his house, turns around, his wife doesn't allow anyone into the house. The house is her kingdom. Runs to catch up with me. V'kuntietza the Biyana Rebbe, and how do you come to the Biyana Rebbe? Yes, but in Stub. Is sein Stub kosher? If the Biyana Rebbe eats in someone's house, is the house kosher? The Rebbe is sein Glatzik. Said the Biyana Rebbe hat man mehr gegessen in Stub. This guy is ready to fight. You know what I look like with my clothes, my lack of beard, prayers, black. Guy's ready to fight. I had mercy on him. I said, all right, listen. And I told him his father was my Rebbe 4 years in high school. I was at his father's engagement party to the daughter of the Biyana. I taught his sister, and we're good friends. Oh, the gabbai didn't know what to do. Yomo Sigma, I got to end the class coming. Yeah, Jack, what did you want to ask?
The talk he gave in Australia was the same talk he gave to the soldiers? I'm not sure.
No. It's two different talks that I combined into one just today. The talk in Australia was essentially what I said. There was more, but the talk for the soldiers was the same theme, Yachid v'tzibur, based upon the Korban Pesach. But you know how good that talk was? I hate to tell you this. I'm revealing.
Which one, Australia or the soldiers?
The one in Australia, I told you I became a king. You right. Don't know what happened after. The one in the army, I can't start to tell you. The head of the rabbinate sent for me. You have no idea what went on, but forget about that. Months later, I'm in Machne Yehuda. And there was one of the people from my unit was a Georgian Rav who had come in Aliyah. He was in his late 30s, and I had a beard when I did basic. You see the picture in the Washington, you grow a beard because you don't want to shave. So I had a 30-day beard. The army doesn't bother you. Have a beard. Gesundheit. So he didn't. I'm standing right next to him by this guy in Machne Yehuda buying tomatoes. He didn't know who I was, didn't recognize me. The guy says, oh, Harav, Chazata Mei Hatiranut, Eich Sehaya. And I shouldn't tell you this, I apologize. The guy says, Haya Kedai Rak Lishmoa Eza Merakoi B'Shem Harav Aron Rakefet. Oh, he says, Hayiti Chozer V'Osir Torenut Baratzon, Im Hayiti Yachol Lishmoa T'Asherim Shel Harav. And I walked away, boy, you don't know. All right, that's not the only story I can tell you. I can tell you more. One time a big truck is delivering Coca-Cola, Machne Yehuda, and he sees me. He parks the truck in the middle of nowhere, jumps down, hugs me, Kvot HaRav B'Glal Chan Nishati Shem Shabbos. He heard me lecture in the army. My wife didn't believe any of this. And one time we're walking on Rehov Yafo, and an army car is going by. The army car stops. I'll tell you the name of the business. I'm going back 40 years now. Avraham Kadosh. He runs over. Kvod harav, ani shomati otcham v'tatzah. Biglavcha nishati shomei Shabbos. He hugged me, hugged me. Avraham Kadosh. Boy, did I become a hero with my wife. She apologized for all the time. She didn't believe me. My dear students, David, you'll feel better when I make someone laugh. You feel better. Rabbi Albert died and years ago. His wife just died. I eulogized her yesterday, and I told the story about Rabbi Albert. At the end of this year, you'll hear it. Or maybe you heard it. I don't know. With the Pesach car. So he told us things over the years. I remember one time Malka had an operation, and they told it'll take a year to recover, a woman's operation. And it's now 7-8 months, and she's still not, you know, suffering. And he told us a story, I can't repeat it now, and we're laughing, and we say, Roy, what the hell are you telling lies for? Impossible! And we were laughing, so Malka gets up. She was a young kid. Never, ever did she have pain again from that operation. And whenever we suffer, we say, where's Roy? Roy, give us a good story. My dear students, you should only have a... Ira Bigel, if you're listening, tell your brother I'm speaking with the Lambs later today. They called me yesterday, but I was in the middle of making corrections on the second chapter of my manuscript on Rabbi Belkin, so I couldn't speak, but I'll speak with them later today and tell them about what your brother told me when he called me regarding Klaus Zichrona Levracha. Okay, I want to wish everyone a chag. For you, I want to say a chag sameach v'kasher. You know what I'm saying. That we work so hard with kashering. If you would know what I did yesterday, I now have 3 rooms kosher to Pesach. And my wife said, I never saw you work so hard. But I told her, look, we're older and you can't really help me that much anymore. So I'm going to do, I got to do Baruch Hashem. So let it be Chag Sameach for kasher. And until we meet again in health and happiness right after the Chag, Das V'Danya.